You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Coming up next is Disability Beat, so stay tuned. This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander, and I'm going to be joined today in just a moment by David Wetherow. I just wanted to give a little information about Dave because he has been a friend and mentor to me and many people in the area for a very long time. Dave Wetherow and his wife and partner, Faye, are pioneers of the very first microboards, small incorporated circles of support that enable direct funding to help people with even the most complicated disabilities to live full lives in their communities. In addition, the Wetherows developed North America's first inclusive housing cooperative, and he was the first person and family directed service cooperatives. David has worked in human service design and development for over 50 years with experience in mental health, addiction recovery, child welfare, and disability services. He has inspired thousands of people with disabilities, their families, and allies to reimagine the value of community-based support through the development of the StarRaft model. And Dave is the executive director of the nonprofit StarRaft Project and joins us from Vancouver Island, British Columbia. I'm assuming you are in British Columbia right now, yes?
Absolutely.
All right. A long way off, but it sounds perfect. So right. Welcome to the program,
Vicki,
Dave.
It's a delight and an honor to be with you again.
It's been a long time since we've talked. We're going to have to do this more often. So the reason we have you on today is because you have a series of trainings coming up. So is there anything you wanted me to add to your you wanted people to know about you that was not in the biography that I read?
Let me think about it. I think one item is that I am an unreasonably committed advocate for any form that we can support people to communicate. So augmentative and alternative communication, and these days communication over the internet, mm-hmm. using phones and watches and all kinds of other devices. Communication is essential, and our support for people to communicate, our role as communication partners, is really very, very important to me. We had had the privilege of living with a little girl who my wife discovered when we were getting kids out of an institution, and they spotted each other across the crowded room, and Faye decided to bring her home. And they brought me home about 10 years later. So I had the honor of being an adoptive co-parent of this wonderful child who lived with some very powerful health and mobility and communication challenges.
Mm-hmm.
As many parents do, we learned her particular language, her tiny bits of voice, her facial expressions. We also often did 20 questions with her. But sometime around kindergarten, one of the people who was in the inclusive school that she attended had the idea of giving her access to a cardboard spelling board. And she began to learn to point out letters on the spelling board. So when she had something very specific to say, we'd look down at the spelling board and we'd bring it up, and she would work through, all kinds of muscle tone problems and spasticity to point out precisely what she wanted to say. And what she wanted to say still has a lot to do with the way I think about the world. We were thinking about continuity of care at that time, who's going to be here when we're gone. And our continuity of care plan was that we were going to all live to be 140 years old and go up in a booth together.
Yeah.
But some things about her body, her heart, and respiration caught up. And after 10 weeks in intensive care, they just weren't able to keep ahead of it, and she passed on. But she's still telling me what to do. So that's the other part of my bio that I think significant here.
I think she'd be really happy that she's still telling you what to do.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about the Star Raft project, because you have been going with this model for a while, and you told me, I think I read that there were maybe 1,500 Star Raft circles around the world right now. Is that still the fact, a close enough number, or is it more than that now?
No, there's 1,500 microboards.
Oh, 1,500 microboards.
Right,
how many?
And the microboards are with our first stab at creating circles of support. They're tiny nonprofit corporations that involve the person and their family members, but also their neighbors and other community partners. So that really began to influence our way of thinking about the power of circles. The circles, Star Raft circles and planned circles and other forms of circle building don't involve creating a nonprofit. They're independent of that. And there are probably well over 1,500 or 2,000 circles of various kinds. There's a significant, probably double or triple handful of Star Raft design circles of support. We've been rolling out that model, that idea, and the support for people to learn how to do that for a little over 10 years now. And the ones that have taken root, the ones that have done what I call getting traction, are still going, many of them are still going after 10, 7, 5, 4 years. I don't really have an accurate count on that, but actually I'm going to be meeting with one at the bottom of the hour today, just after our phone call. And this is a circle that started about 3 years ago. The young person in question, by the way, I'm 83, so 60's young, and she's 60 years old.
Mm-hmm.
She and her mom had become very, very deeply isolated. She had moved into a, quote, independent living apartment. And after she checked off all the boxes about, checkbooks and folding her laundry and things like that, the services went away, but she was kind of stuck in that apartment, 90 miles away from her family, from her mom, from her friends, from her church, from anything that was meaningful to her. And when she got a hip problem, her mom moved in with her. So now mom's 90 miles away and was kind of skeptical about building the circle. But once we started doing that, once we started helping them identify the first couple of people that they wanted to bring into a circle of support, not just for Sarah, but her mom, things started to change. And we did a person-centered plan called a PATH with a wonderful graphic facilitator. And the PATH includes the vision, the long-term vision, and some of the short-term activities called the next steps list. And they were kind of convinced that it would take at least a year to make any significant progress on anything. So we incorporated that into the PATH. And within the first 3 weeks, they moved 6 major items from the next steps list to the done list. My daughter, Alia, says they've opened every cell circle meeting by celebrating the done list. Well, they had moved 6 major items that had to do with mobility and driving and disability, so she could get reconnected with her community, with her church and her poetry group and things like that. And the group ended up moving, I think it was 27 major items around speech and communication and advocacy. She's a real environmental advocate when she gets time to do that, when she's not getting physiotherapy. Even political advocacy, she wanted to be back on the platform committee of her chosen political party. They moved 27 of those items from the next steps to the done list in the next 3 months.
Can we back up, Dave?
They're now up to 67 items. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, could we back up a little bit and talk about how this circle came to be? Who are the people that join the circle, and how are they related to this person who is the focus?
Sure. Well, first of all, we supported and they identified people who they wanted to bring into the picture.
Mm-hmm.
So at first it was, and I can use Sarah's name because I've got her permission to say her name.
Mm-hmm.
But Sarah and her mom said, well, let's bring Sarah's dad in and Sarah's brother, Jamie. But there's also Mary, who's been a good friend of ours for a long time, and Gail, who is 75 years old and is as wise as a river. And they started naming people. And one of the things that we teach people is not to ask the question, would you join this circle for a lifetime? It's a lot easier and a lot more successful to say, you know, we know that you care about us. We care about you. This is what we're thinking about doing. Can you come and have coffee with us or come and have a Zoom meeting with us and help us think about this for a while? And that's a real easy thing for people to do. And folks are honored when you ask them to do that because you're recognizing that their contribution, that their particular relationship with the person. So we help people very, very gradually invite people into this conversation and into the circle. And then when we start to do planning, one of the first things that we do is we don't start with planning. We start with giving everybody an opportunity to talk about what they love and appreciate and have been learning from the person at the center. And Jack Pierpoint, Marcia Forrest, who created PATH, called that the gift wall. And the gift wall is one of the things that we sort of pop up at the beginning of every circle meeting, remembering why we're here, why we came here. And Sarah's gifts of poetry and advocacy for things outside of the disability field, and her gift of fidelity and her gift of happiness really showed up for a lot of people. And so it's a very gradual process. Usually if you're in a state planning system, you know, the individual program plan or the individual service plan, you get that once a year and it all happens at once. And it's limited to what the state is prepared to talk about.
Exactly.
Because they don't want to talk about anything they can't deliver. But the circle and the person and the people who love them can talk about their hope for the future for this person. And that's usually a life that's rich in relationships and involves meaningful community, meaningful education, meaningful employment, meaningful contributions, not necessarily folding your laundry and filling out your checkbook, which you can get other people to help you with, By the way, I just this morning realized that our website name, the StarRaftProject.com, is kind of long and kind of hard to spell. So I've had the website name, agoodlife.org, is the top-level domain name for nonprofits, agoodlife.org. Mm-hmm. And I linked it to our major website. So if people want to find out more about what this is like and how it's designed, they can go to agoodlife.org and learn about that. I just need to stop. Hold on for a second. There we go. I got a notification. That's, you know, and we've done that one way or another, one time or another, with people who some are older and some are very young. Some have developmental disabilities. Some have physical or cognitive disabilities related to aging, dementia, Parkinson's, and things like that. Just one more comment. When I was in child welfare, I was doing program evaluation in child welfare. We used to kick kids out of child welfare when they turned 18 and a half, I think, and dump them out of foster homes or care homes or even institutions. And as often as not, the kids would end up on the street. And that's not a safe place to land. So what I began to think about as we were building circles for people who happen to have developmental disabilities was, what if we in child welfare started building these kinds of circles of wisdom and connection and opportunity and reasonableness for kids who are in the child welfare system, and especially ready to age out of the child welfare system? And a term that you're familiar with sort of came to mind, which is the idea of creating what we ended up calling a soft landing committee. Mm-hmm. For these kids. And we've done a soft landing committee recently for a couple of people who were returning home from being in prison or coming out of institutions or coming out of school to, you know, whatever's next. And these days, not much is next because of cuts in Medicaid and service systems and things like that.
Right.
The landing turned out to be a really important idea. So building a soft landing circle of people who can help you make connections to places where they are connected, it was turned out to be a really powerful idea.
Can we go back to Sarah again and maybe give some examples of some of the ways that her circle helped connect her to specific, you know, things or areas or other people or organizations?
Sure. Absolutely. Well, one of her intentions was to get back onto the platform committee of her chosen political party. And she did most of that herself, although her mom and one of the younger people in the circle, a fellow named Chris, who is a tech guru, he outshines me in technology by a long way. Chris helped her get teched up so that she could attend these meetings by Zoom and also get involved in making videos about her environmental advocacy and in connection with people who were making videos and in connection with people who were doing that kind of work. So each of the people in the circle had connections with other people who were doing things that Sarah was interested in. And I'll never forget the day, because she loves to write poetry. And I'll never forget the day that somebody in a circle meeting said, by the way, Gary at the bookstore on Main Street, back in your home community, is having poetry slam evenings every Friday night, and maybe you'd like to get reconnected there. And she did. And that opened up a whole new set of connections, but also a line to getting her stuff published, to getting her poetry published. And so she's got one more Circle member who knows something about publishing on online publishing and getting things into Kindle and so on. So one thing after another leads to, you know, this, what I ended up calling a window of opportunity. So one thing that we did based on what Sarah was experiencing and what her helpers were doing was we created a new role in the Circle. And that's somebody who is keeping an eye out for the split second when a window of opportunity opens. You know, I know a guy who runs a poetry slam group, and their job is to write that down and to bring it back because it disappears if you don't do that. And the other similar kind of role is that of the person who's watching and listening for safety issues that come up.
Mm-hmm.
And this was triggered when her mom said, Sarah is a really good power wheelchair driver. He's really good at navigating the handy transit bus system. But when she gets off the bus, her vision is limited, and she can't tell whether she's about to drive over a curb or a curb cut on her way across the street. So she needs somebody to meet her at the bus stop and walk with her to the place where she's going, like church or the community college or the poetry slam group, and who has as much interest in going there as she does, so they can happily do that together. And so the other role that we created was the person who listens for those safety issues and then helps to lead the group to figuring out what are the agreements that we need to make and keep, the safety agreements that we need to make and keep, so that she remains safe and that we all stay safe in the work that we're doing together.
And that is so critical because, safety is a key for so many families who are afraid to take that step. They're afraid to make that step because they're worried about safety.
Exactly. I remember one, not too long ago, it was about 8 months ago, a young man who has an extreme form of cerebral palsy, like our daughter did. And he wanted to, he's maybe 6 months or so from getting out of school, from graduating from school, and he wants to go to college at a university that's about 70 miles away from where they live. And his mother is absolutely terrified about that prospect. And during the meeting when he was expressing this desire and she was putting a damper on it and they started yelling at each other and she started, you know, walking out the door, slamming the door and then coming back in, what we did was we got back into the role of saying, tell us what it is to the mom. Tell us what it is that you would need to have in place so that you feel comfortable. You could live with him being at college, being in the university, being in a dorm, and then being able to turn to him and say, can you live with this? So finding the place where it really is safe and where both parties can live with it. So that may not be their absolute preference. Her preference would have been for him to be home forever, and his preference would be, you know, to be out on the road forever. And they were able to find common ground. So there's a little pattern inside of the larger StarRaft idea that talks about coming to these kinds of agreements around safety issues. And again, it's based on saying, what are the safety agreements that we need to make and keep and guarantee that we will keep them so that, you know, everything doesn't get stopped by the safety concern,
yeah.
but also the person remains safe.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful, continuously developing process, but it also brings in the things that we learned over literally over 50 years of being involved in human services.
Yeah, most of which was not good, but you applied the good things and made it work, and it's just an amazing process. I don't want to talk so much about stories as much as the details about how people can learn more about the StarRaft right. project. So let's talk about yeah. those details for a minute. And if we have more time, you know, we can go back and cover other things.
Okay. What I decided was that going around and doing a road show where you, you know, rent a big space and bring people in and have, projectors and things like that, and try to do training on the road was a very expensive and not very effective way of getting people the knowledge that they needed of the little micro strategies to do this work.
Mm-hmm.
And COVID came along and took all of us off the road for several years, and it forced us onto Zoom. And one of the ways that we adapted this training for Zoom was that instead of doing, you know, one sort of long session, we cut it into four different sessions. One is the idea of gather your circle and how to do that. Another is set a good direction and how to do that. And that's that kind of planning process that we took on. And the third is what we call take the helm, because we're using a sailing metaphor to talk about all of this. And take the helm means in any moment, at any given moment, something new is going to show up, either a new opportunity or a new problem or a new challenge. And you need to be able to very rapidly make a course adjustment to accommodate to that, you know, either a safety adjustment or face an opportunity that hadn't shown up before. We've already talked about that. So taking the helm is a matter of fine-tuning the direction. And the last one, the last session, is about getting through difficult times, through turbulent times together, so that this can last a lifetime. And one of the wonderful things about all of the Circle enterprises, including ours, is that they are designed to last a lifetime, so the parent doesn't have to get night sweats over the question, who's going to be here if I go away, right, mm-hmm. after I'm gone.
Right.
And that involves basically two elements. One is to keep the work generating energy and generating people's commitments and generating people's contributions. And the other is helping people get through difficult times. And one of the things that occurred to me a long time ago is I don't know of any relationship, you know, any marriage, any friendship, any circle, any company that doesn't run into turbulent times, that doesn't run into times of conflict or depression or despondency. And you have to have tools for getting through turbulent times. And so in the fourth session, we share four major tools for getting through those difficult times and for unraveling times of difficult communication, of conflict, and so on.
Dave, we're running out of time. We need to that. Okay. How do people register to get this information? Because I tell you, it is life-changing. People need to consider this.
And I appreciate that. And I know that you've experienced that yourself, and you've supported a lot of other people to experience. Go to agoodlife.org, agoodlife.org. And that'll take you to the StarRaft Project website. And on the StarRaft Project website, every single page has a button that says, register for free training now. And by the way, just one last word. That is our hallmark idea, that we're going to make, we are making this free for families forever, period. No charge, you know, no charge, no bake sales, no government funding. We're doing the whole thing on a volunteer basis.
Thank you so much, David Weatherow of the StarRef Project. We really appreciate you. Thank you so much, David. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week.